Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by ChampionshipBreeders.com. Championship Breeders is a proud supporter of the American Kennel Club, our specialty and all breed clubs, our dog sports, and the gifts of therapy and service from our canine companions. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and today we have a very cool guest with us. This is Jason Duby, and Jason runs Plum Tree and Blue Ticks as a kennel of hound dogs. And so we are going to the hounds today, and we're going to talk to Jason about running your dogs in night hunts, about coonhound bench shows, about a whole level of involvement in dogs in the American Kennel Club than we've ever had a chance to talk about before. So welcome, Jason.
Thank you.
Excellent. So talk to me. Tell me, when did you start in Blue Ticks?
I got into hounds and Blue Ticks at the same time. That's what I wanted to start with about 10 years ago now.
Yeah?
Is when we started hunting, and then we didn't get into breeding until probably 4 years later. We had our first litter.
Right.
And what
drew you to Blue Ticks? What made you say, I gotta have me a Blue Tick hound?
To be honest, it was my wife, believe it or not. Because she grew up, obviously, in the Saint world.
Your wife is Dani Duby, and her parents raised Saint Bernards.
Yes. And Blue Ticks were just being introduced in AKC, and she made the suggestion. I liked how that they looked. You know, and they just had a really cool temperament, and I got my first one, Haley, and that was it. I mean, that was it from there. That's all I've wanted. I mean, we hunt other dogs, too, but breeding-wise, I stick with the Blue Ticks.
Right. So talk to me about running hounds. I mean, this is an area that's way outside a lot of people's wheelhouse, people's comfort zone. So talk to me. What do you hunt? What kind of prey are your dogs hunting?
It's kind of crazy for us. I mean, we're all over the map. If it's tree game, we usually chase.
So what is tree game?
Tree game would be anything that climbs a tree. So your coons, possums are considered not the most favorable
of game. Kind of like trash game.
That's trash game.
Yeah, right?
But, you know, we run personally bear, lion, mountain lion. Coon, bobcat. But we have
and
to travel.
And here in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, in the Pacific Northwest, here in Oregon, we can hunt bobcat, fox, and coon.
Okay.
We have to travel out of state, obviously, to do big game because it has been restricted in certain states.
Okay. But so hunting regulations has a great deal to do with what you can hunt and where you can hunt.
Exactly. You know, so it's a lot of time figuring out what seasons are open when, travel expenses, plus they're usually a draw. So you have to apply early in the year and you don't always get it.
Okay.
So it's having a big game dog now, especially, is tougher than ever.
In today's society, that's a whole nother reality.
Yeah, it's just kind of getting lost.
Mm-hmm. And so speaking of a lost sport, this is something, a sport that was developed in the United States, really.
Yep.
And mostly in the southern United States. When did it really kind of come into being, the idea of running game with hounds? Scent hounds specifically.
Scent hounds. I don't even know if you can put a date on it. You know, it's been just a constant evolution for hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
But the coon hounds, I mean, I would say really like the 40s and 50s is when it really started picking up.
Mm-hmm.
You started seeing the registry. I would say that's probably about the time it all got rolling.
So in the South, particularly, is where you think about a lot of the, if you will, the hound dogs.
Yeah,
right?
Because they are known as coon hounds, you know. And out here in the Pacific Northwest, I mean, there's places with them. But the guys back there are really blessed with a plentiful game supply. That's why most of the big competition hunts are out East Coast, South. Because they have the population for the demand. Even though we're not harvesting any animals during these hunts, you know, we still need a plentiful population for us to have a return hunt every year.
Right. So you just made a point that I think it's important for our listeners to understand. You're not actually during the competitions. No animals are harmed in this competition.
No.
So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, what it is, you know, it's a timed hunt. And UKC also runs them. That's kind of where it all started. But AKC rules are fairly similar, you know, and you can download any of the regulations.
And we'll put a link to the show notes on that.
So, but AKC is still kind of new to the coonhound thing. You know, it's really picking up speed. that's kind of why, as a breeder, we find it really important, my wife and I, to produce dogs that are dual purpose, because a lot of these breeders don't have the opportunity to hunt like we do out here, which, right? You know, is unfortunate,
right?
Because they would enjoy it so much. But, you know, we just really focus on getting these dual purpose dogs and keeping it that way, so we don't have to open a registry down the road to bring in new blood like the Black and Tan Club has had to do in the past. Mm-hmm.
So when you're running a night hunt, an American Kennel Club, that's what they call it, right? Mm-hmm. Night hunt?
Yep.
Okay. So give me just kind of a basic understanding. How does that roll?
You know, it's a 2-hour timed hunt normally, and I'm a little foggy on the AKC versus UKC because that's what I run more of. But it's a 2-hour time hunt, and you have a point system. They draw out randomly 4 dogs to go on one cast, and that's when we all go out together. So there's only 4 dogs at a time.
Okay.
And what people don't realize is sometimes there's 200 to 400 dogs at these hunts.
So that takes a long time.
There's that many places for us to go within driving distance, 4 dogs at a time.
So everybody starts at the same place, but then they kind of spread out.
And then you have a guide. Okay. You have an assigned guide that takes you to your hunting locations. Usually for a 2-hour hunt, you have anywhere between 2 and 4 drop locations that you can hunt.
Okay, so, and how many miles are these dogs going to cover?
You know, on a competition hunt, it's really hard to say. If it's thick coons, you know, they might only run 5 miles to 10 miles. And that's generally probably pretty close for the coon hound events. You know,
okay, hunting. So the dogs are running 10 miles, so.
Yeah.
And how many miles are you running?
You know, that's the thing is they're doing a lot of dodging and weaving. So, I mean, you know, for us, it's usually a 2 to 3 mile hike, you know, on a night hunt.
Okay, and you're doing this in the dark, right?
Oh, yeah, in the dark. Yeah, you know, like our local club, we usually draw out at 7 and we usually drop a dog in the woods by 10, 5 a.m. check-in time.
Oh my gosh. And so in your 2 hours, you're timed and you're judged on?
On your performance based on what they do is they call it striking a track when the dog barks. So the first dog to strike a track is declared by the owner or the handler and they are awarded 100 points.
Okay.
The second dog to do so is awarded 75, then 50, and then 25. So it's all tracked.
Okay.
And then when your dog's treed, you have to declare it, and you're awarded 125 for first, 75 for second, 50 for third, and 25.
And so when the dog is treed, that means it has
game potentially in, has game
in a tree.
Hopefully,
okay,
yes.
Right? And so do you get points taken off if there's no raccoon there?
Yeah, what happens is, you know, a lot of times we'll have a good track that they tree and you can't find a coon in it. You know, sometimes it is a den tree, you know, a hollowed out tree.
Right.
Other times it's because a dog got a little happy and he's trying to pull one over the other ones. If that's the case, like a den tree where it has a visible means of escape without detection is what I would say is probably the best description.
Okay.
You circle the points. So they are neither plus nor minus. It's just a wash.
Okay.
If it's obviously slick, meaning there's no game in it, you're minus your track and your tree points.
Okay.
And once you get down so far, I think it's 400 points negative for AKC. You're scratched from the hunt. So
okay. So you want your dog to be honest.
Honest,
right?
More
like
than
we
anything.
Think in pointing dogs. You want it to be honest.
It's kind of like anything else, perseverance. It's if that dog, even if it takes him twice as long to tree, but he's got it, it'll win you hunts.
Okay. So pretty much I'm flashing back now to my childhood and reading Where the Red Fern Grows.
Oh, yeah.
And that's real.
That's where everybody goes, oh, yeah, that's real.
Okay. Okay, because that's where everybody's going to go, man.
Yeah, no, that's where, to me, that's the main focus for all of this, is preservation of our sport and our traditions. I wasn't really blessed with being in a hound hunting family. I just wanted to get into it. And a couple other friends of mine, Brandon Cobey, he's one of them. He's my hunting partner. And we both started about the same time. And it was just because we had a love for the dogs, and now it's taken us places we never would have even thought of going. I've traveled the country. My employment has been based off of my dogs. Mm-hmm. It's been a real wild ride for the last 10 years, but a fun one.
That's awesome. So you're talking about preservation of the sport, and we talk about that a lot in other sports.
Right.
So this is history. It's tradition. Mm-hmm. What is it about this that draws you in, you as a houndsman?
To me personally, I might sound like a bad houndsman for a moment. Literally any working dog gets me fired up. I don't care if it's a herding dog. I don't care if it's a a police dog. Any kind of dog working is what gets me going. I just so happen to really enjoy listening to a hound dog, you know, at the right times, not at home in the kennel, but I love to go listen to a good race, you know, it really gets you back in tune with things, especially now that I have a son. You know, it's really cool to see him light up over the dogs, and when he hears them, it's definitely an experience everybody should have.
Awesome. So back to our night hunt. So they tree the raccoon, and they have to prove that there's game. So you have to, like, see it, right?
What they do is your first dog to declare treed has the option to shine the tree first. And there's a set time period where they can use their lights to shine and look for the tree. Or if they elect so, everybody can look. In a situation, sometimes that's better. So you can get it scored and move on and get hunting again. Some guys kind of like to hold back and make somebody find their own, because if they don't find it, they lose points. So, I mean, a lot of it is a handler's game. You got to know what you're doing, definitely. If you don't know your rule book, you're not
going to
win.
Just like the show ring, it's still about the handler, isn't it?
Exactly. It really
is. And other handler or professional? Do you guys have professionals in that sport?
I guess you could call them professionals. I would consider them professionals of their craft, whether
they're paid or
an actual compensation for it or not. But I mean, there's a lot of them out there that hit the circuits. And I mean, when you get into other registries like PKC and CHKC, you're talking about winning brand new trucks. I hunted against a dog last year in Wisconsin that by March, I think he had already won 20 or 30,000 in PKC earnings.
Wow.
I mean, some of these dogs are winning over 100,000 a year plus
a
pickup.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's real money. I mean, especially when you get back east. Out here, it's more of a pleasure than anything. But yeah, back east, it's big time business, really. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're studding a dog. Even selectively, you get the right stud dog, it's huge for these guys.
Interesting.
And they campaign them just the same. You know, the Purina race they do every year.
So there's rankings.
Oh, yeah. You can follow it all. It's pretty big.
Cool. Okay. So we're back to the tree. And you shine your light up in the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And you see eyeballs.
That's
what I'm thinking.
Yep,
you know, it's
for the
dark. The only thing you're going to see is eyeballs.
Yeah. You know, these lights are pretty high powered. If you crank them up, you can see them. We usually generally like to see the eyeballs first.
Right.
You know, then you can turn your light up, because most of the time they look away. And you really don't want to miss an opportunity to score it.
Mm-hmm.
We have coon squallers. If they are in a hollow den, it's a little mouth call that simulates a coon fighting. And with them being a predatory animal, a lot of times they'll come out. Right now is mating season. We've squalled a couple out in the last week, you know, and they'll climb right down the tree sometime on top of the dogs.
It
just depends. And that's breeding season's when things get a little crazy sometimes.
Right. So no prey is harmed in this sport, but sometimes the dogs get hurt.
Sometimes.
What's that about? How does that go?
You know, that really the guys that are doing this seriously, they're breeding for a tougher dog. I mean, just like anybody. Feet are huge for hound guys. We want really good, tight feet that'll hold up.
Tough, right?
Tough. I mean, leather tough.
Right.
When we're running here in the wintertime, I usually have my dogs do 30 miles a night, four nights a week.
Wow. And that's your conditioning program?
That's between conditioning and hunting. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we go, I want them to do 25 to 30 miles a night.
Wow.
Which is insane. I mean, really, I know I couldn't do it. But that's what they need to keep going. I mean, sometimes these races last 6-7 hours.
So when you get into higher levels of competition, you get out of the time.
That's just more of the pleasure side. Competitions are always 1 hour or 2 hours.
Okay.
You know, 1 hour is a new addition to UKC, but AKC, I believe, is still two hours.
Okay. And so once you see the eyeballs, then you move on, yeah?
You handle your dogs.
No furry creature was harmed here. You've just moved on.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep, we handle our dogs, and then we score the tree, and then we walk them away, and we start the clock again, and go on hunting and try to catch as many as we can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if your first strike and first tree, you get 225 plus.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these hunts, guys are coming in with 1,600 points.
So you're picking up multiple game animals in the evening.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then out here, you know, we're lucky to get two or three. So it's huge difference when we go back east to hunt.
Right, right. And just sheer curiosity, do you get like bigger points for bigger animals? Is a raccoon count the same as a bear?
The competition hunts are just coon only.
Okay.
And in the registered dog class, which would be anybody just coming in with a dog, you're in the registered cast. You know, you don't get points for off game possums. We have a beaver problem here in the Pacific Northwest. They like to run those.
Yep.
Skunk. If any of those happen, you know, you don't get points. But when you do jump into the Knight Champion class, it's a disqualification.
So interesting.
You
okay.
could be literally 5 minutes into a hunt, bump a deer in a cornfield,
and you're host.
And you're done, even right. if you drove from here to Wisconsin.
Know. Are you speaking here from experience, Jason? Is that what you're
No, we've been blessed to not have that one happen. We've lost fair and square.
But, oh my gosh.
You know, we just finished out one Knight Championship on my Ralph dog. You know, that was my first Knight Champion just because our opportunities out here. We don't have a club in California. We don't have one in Nevada anymore. I think we have one here in Oregon, which is a 5-hour drive for me. And there's one in Pomeroy, Washington, or we have to go to Laurel, Montana. And those wow. are for UKC. We don't have an AKC club out here. We could not get a hunt title on an AKC dog on the West Coast, which is really sad.
Interesting.
It's really sad.
And so part of what you're doing, and I've talked to you about this before, part of what you're doing is trying to build that enthusiasm, build mm-hmm. that sport up
exactly.
such that you might get enough people together that you could make a champion in AKC.
Right.
What would it be, AKC field champion?
Well, they do have your field trials, which is a whole nother event. We may have to do another interview. You have your four championships in the Coonhound events, your bench championship, your field trial championship, your night hunt championship, and your water race championship.
Yeah, no, that's amazing.
it's a lot. Some of these dogs are quad grand. I bought a dog from Robbie Brooks, whose father was a quad grand champion. Mm-hmm. But that is just countless hours, hunts, money, time. It's insane.
Right, that's a lot.
It's insane.
And so if we go to the confirmation side of it,
yep.
this group of hounds are shown in regular AKC shows.
Correct.
And they're also shown in Coonhound
bench shows.
Shows. Yes. And those are two separate things.
Yeah, they're actually two different point systems as well. So, I mean, really, if you like getting awards and you like getting championships, Coonhounds are where it's at.
Cool.
You know, you can get your confirmation titles just the same as any all breed show. And then we have all the field trials, water races, night hunts, mm-hmm. the bench shows. It's essentially the dog standing there. I mean, I want to say kind of like there are other bench shows in AKC. It's just strictly for the seven breeds.
And tell me, what are the seven Coonhound breeds that are competing in all these events? I know, I'm putting you on the spot. You can do this.
I know, now I'm going to have to count.
Blue tick Coonhound.
So black and tans.
Okay.
Blue ticks.
Yep.
Walkers. Red bones. Plots. English. And the new edition of the Leopard Hound, which I'm not sure is recognized by AKC yet.
Interesting. Okay. And so the American English, is that what you're calling the English?
Yeah, the American English would be the
okay.
English.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, there is. You know, especially with all the varieties. Like, mm-hmm. English are a pretty cool breed because mm-hmm. so many color variants.
But you're here not talking about an English foxhound or an American foxhound. You're
no,
talking about the
American
English
coonhound.
Coonhound.
Yes.
Which is a whole different thing
yeah.
than an American or an English foxhound.
Exactly.
Wild. And all of these coonhound breeds basically developed here in the United States.
Well, yes. I mean, through selective breeding, I would say if you put one true to the U.S. would be the Plot Hounds.
Okay.
Bob Plot has a really great book out called Strike and Stay. His great-great-grandfather,
yeah,
I believe.
Definitely. We'll put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, his ancestors founded the breed in West Virginia, so he's a wealth of knowledge, super nice guy. But I would put probably that is the most American bred mm-hmm. in just an opinion, because mm-hmm. that's all I can probably give you is an opinion on that one.
Very, very cool. Okay, so in the same day, you can do an American Kennel Club uh-huh. championship show and a Coonhound bench show and then go to a night hunt.
We've actually done a confirmation show, two bench shows, and went to a night hunt on the same day.
That's just insane.
Because we're allowed to run two bench shows morning and afternoon if we choose to.
Right, right. Yeah. And so talk to me, I know only because we've done it here locally, talk
right.
to me about what clubs could do in other parts of the country to add a Coonhound bench show to their dog show.
Right. It's fairly simple. If, you know, you contact your AKC representative, there are specific dimensions for the benches. They're mm-hmm. easily built. I mean, I built seven of them for our club in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's a little different. You know, they do check movement, and that is still a big thing. But when it comes down to it, it's how you can handle that dog on a bench. And it's a lot of poking and prodding and training, and it takes a lot to keep them knuckled up on their toes and keep their tail set right and their ears perked but not erect. I mean, it's pretty crazy. That is definitely an art that I wish I had. I am not a good bench show person.
Interesting.
I have a lot of respect for some of those bench show handlers.
Okay, and so I think we do need to make a distinction here. This is not an American Kennel Club sanctioned show that's on a bench like the Garden.
Right.
This is a coonhound bench show in which the dogs are exhibited while standing on a raised bench.
Yep. Exactly. They usually do all your females and then all your males. They have a best in breed, male and female, best in show. And then at certain events, they have king and queen of show.
Interesting. You know,
there's lots of classes. The juniors class, when you get into some of these bigger hunts, you have dual champion class. So they have to have a night championship as well as a show championship to compete in that class.
And just the show championship, then you're talking about a bench show.
A bench show championship, an AKC. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it is nice to see a lot of these people, though, that mainly did the bench shows. Now they're switching to confirmation. A lot of them out there. Obviously, we have a lot of contact with the Blue Tick Club of America, but it seems like everybody's making that shift to confirmation, which is really nice. But it would be nice if, in exchange, you know, some of these clubs could start putting on the bench shows, too.
The coonhound bench shows.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very cool. Okay, so this is all relatively new for the American Kennel Club. I mean, Blue Ticks were, I think, the first of those that were recognized.
Had or close. 8 years ago, 9 years ago, probably.
Okay.
And they were going to close our registry and decided to keep it open.
Okay. And so it's really just been in the last, say, 10 years, really, that you've seen some of these additional coonhounds, mm-hmm. you know, the coonhound breeds, if you will, come in.
Yep.
And are you seeing particular growth, or how do you describe that end of the fancy at the AKC Dog Show?
I think we're seeing more participation, especially from people who cannot get to the woods. You know, they still love our breeds. They just don't have the opportunity to do necessarily what we intended on the hunt side.
Mm-hmm.
But they can show, and they mm-hmm. do it, and they mm-hmm. love it. I mean, mm-hmm. there's several people in California that we show with a lot. Holly Baker down in Arizona. And even when I go out east, you know, when I went to the World Hunt, I got to meet Cynthia Grooms and some of these other breeders out there. That was really nice.
Very cool. And so this is one of the things that I feel really strongly about. And so we can talk about it from your perspective, too, because I think you think about it the same way. You talked a little bit about watching a dog do what it's meant to do
mm-hmm.
and how powerful that is. So can you kind of develop that and talk about when your puppies get started or?
Yeah. You know, to me, if I never trained a dog past a year old, I'd be a happy camper. In fact, that's kind of what I'm starting to do now, is bring in some of these young dogs from fellow breeders in the coonhound world and bring them in for 2, 3, 4 months when they're 6 months old and evaluate them, give them a progress report and tell them, you know, it's your choice what you do with your breeding program, but this dog seems to really excel in this area or it's lacking here, so you may want to look for a good complement in a breeding partner down the road. But at least give some of these people that don't have the opportunity to get out to get their breeding stock out there to test it, which
cool.
I think is going to be a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
Because once a pup, that first time it opens on a track, first time it barks, I mean, it's chills. You can't stop. I've got a 7-month-old puppy right now that just every time I put him on the dirt amazes me. And I know he is the best dog I've probably ever owned. And I'm just waiting for him to become it. And that is a really cool feeling.
That is so awesome. All right.
You get it.
I totally get it. I totally get it. Well, Jason, thank you so much. We've kept you. I know you've got lots going on. Thank you very, very much for sharing your passion.
Sure, no problem.
And we'll catch you on the flip side.
All right, thanks for having me.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.